to the Broadway Church Leadership Podcast. Thanks for joining us this month. We release new content every month, and we are focused on leadership. Please take an opportunity once you listen to this podcast to rate and review it on your podcast app. I know every podcast asks you to do this, but it really does help people find the content when you do that. Today, our special guest is Simon Gow. Simon Gow is the Executive Director of City Reach Care Society. City Reach Care Society is the urban outreach arm of Broadway Church, but it exists as its own nonprofit. And this organization has seen incredible growth over this last 12 or so months during the COVID crisis. Pastor Simon is going to come and talk to us about something totally different, actually. He's been part of our staff for over 10 years and has a lot of pastoral experience and has helped lead us as a staff through a process of discovering our staff culture. So over the next three episodes, we're going to define what a staff culture is. We're going to hopefully give you some tools to help you discover your staff culture. And we're going to go over the staff culture covenant that we as a Broadway Church staff have created. So why don't we get into it, Pastor Simon? Why don't you begin by defining and describing what a staff culture is?
Yeah, thanks, Paul. Staff culture is it's a funny thing. It's there in every organization, whether they know it or not. You either create it or you wake up to it. But it exists in every organization. And so what we decided at Broadway a number of years ago was, hey, rather than just waking up to this thing, why don't we be intentional about defining it and discovering what our staff culture is?
Sure. And so why is it important to do this? Like, why is it important to define your staff culture?
Well, every organization has a mission or a vision, or they should. And every organization has core values or some set of beliefs or standards by which they do business. And most organizations have, you know, a good set of structures or systems in place to kind of to know how to operate. And the moment you kind of go one level deeper and you start to discover and define your staff culture, you go from just knowing what to do, knowing kind of the how we're going to do the what, to kind of the language, a shared language, or think of it as like a smell of your organization. Mm. You know when you go to your friend's house?
Yeah, my friend's house. Right. Carry on.
Not your house, Paul.
No.
Your house does not have a smell. But you know you go to your friend's house and you walk in, you're at the threshold of the door, and you're hit by a wave of their smell. And you know you're in their friend's house because they have a smell. Well, every organization has a smell. And this is kind of what the staff culture is. It's kind of like the smell of your organization. It's the oil in the machinery, you know, that makes things run smoothly or not run smoothly. So this is kind of what we've kind of set out to discover and define.
So carrying on with your analogy about smell, to not be awake to your staff culture would be noseblind
yes.
to your own smell.
Yeah, no one wants to be noseblind, but that's exactly it.
You don't realize you have it, but others around you do.
Yes, that's right. And so the staff culture, to be noseblind to your staff culture is kind of like to be blind to those unwritten, call them ghost protocols, those unwritten rules or expectations that we put upon our staff members or that staff members might have for one another. And no one really talks about them. They're kind of there, they exist. And the longer you're in the organization, the more apparent they are, the more obvious they are, and the more that you'd kind of abide by them to kind of get along and to see productivity happen in your organization. But if you're new to an organization and you're unaware of this smell that's going on or these ghost protocols, you know, these unwritten rules that everyone else seems to be abiding by, but you didn't know about them, you run into a lot of problems or conflict can arise or just some hiccups.
Now, is this your original idea? Did you come up with this idea or where did it come from? And maybe tell us a little bit how you came up, or I guess I'm on the staff too. We came up with this staff culture.
Yeah, this is not new to us. We didn't invent this by any stretch of the imagination. Many have gone before us and have paved the way defining staff culture. Daniel Coyle, he says this about staff culture. He says, culture is a set of living relationships working together towards a shared goal. It's not something you are, it's something you do. He wrote a book called The Culture Code. That's one of the resources that helped define, shape, as we discovered, our staff culture. It's funny, the people like Craig Rochelle and Andy Stanley, Peter Drucker, that have dove headfirst into things like defining a staff culture and discovering how to make a staff culture for your organization, we're indebted to their work. So we gleaned a lot from that as we looked at our organization and said, hey, how do we define this thing?
Culture is very important. And you mentioned Peter Drucker. I think his quote about culture eating systems or strategy for breakfast is really important here. It doesn't matter what your strategy or your systems or any of that is. If you have the wrong culture, it won't thrive. And if you have the right culture, the strategies and systems will be taken even farther.
Absolutely. Staff culture, it's the underbelly of everything that's built upon top of that, the core values, the mission statement, the systems, the procedures, right? Culture eats systems for breakfast, as Drucker says. Like that is, it's the culture that we're really trying to drill down on. Andy Stanley says, it's not the statements on the wall that matter, it's the attitudes in the hall. And so our mission statement can say anything. You know, we believe this, or we're going to change the world that way. And our core values say we're going to be generous and relevant and have a safe environment. But that those are the things we put on the wall. But it's the cultures is the attitude that our staff members, maybe our volunteers, they have in the hallways. That really is what matters in an organization. How does the staff interact with the mission and values? How do they live it out practically? What are the things that overflow out of their work environment because of the mission and values of an organization? And that's the culture, and that's what we're drilling down on.
Really great. So why don't you tell us a little bit about where this came from for you personally?
So we have interns every year here at Broadway Church. And part of my role was to debrief with the interns at the end of their internship. Mm-hmm. And so they'd be with us for 3-4 months over their summer. These are university students that have come to intern with us. And at the end of their internship, I would ask them, like, what was the best part about, you know, working for Broadway? What was the worst part? What were things that surprised you? These kind of things. And year after year, I kept getting the same feedback from these interns. And it was surprising to me. The first couple times I heard it was, one of the things that I kept hearing was, I didn't realize how jokey your staff was. I didn't realize that the lead pastor is sarcastic with the secretary and that, you know, the worship leader is cracking jokes with the missions guy. And the perception that these interns had before they arrived and were on our staff was that, you know, we're very spiritual and holy people and very serious. And we have a world to change, and we have the good news of Jesus that must be proclaimed, and we're going to take our job seriously, and everything is very formal. And then when these interns actually got around our staff room table and saw how we interacted with each other, they were blown away that people are joking and we're laughing, and there's a joy about what we do. And they always said that is something they weren't expecting, but was kind of a breath of fresh air. And so that was kind of what started me on this whole journey. I'm going, oh, that's so strange. Like, that seems so normal to us. Again, mm-hmm. I was nose blind to that being an odd thing in our organization. Mm-hmm. I'd been in part of the staff at that point for about 7 years. And I'm like, oh yeah, that's just how we operate. That's normal mm-hmm. for us. And then just hearing these comments going, oh, maybe it's not as normal as I think it is. Mm-hmm. I thought, what are the other things? These other, you know, staff, the shared staff values or things mm-hmm. about our culture that are happening just below the surface, just under our noses that we're not even aware of. Sure. And so we started this process of doing a dive into discovering what our staff culture really is.
Mm-hmm. So let's, why don't we go through now this list of 10 things that we've put together as a staff culture covenant. But as we were preparing for this, Simon, we were talking, we were saying it's less important that people grab onto our 10 things as it is that they go through the process of defining what their staff culture is. We need to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's right. So we will jump into kind of the 10 statements that we came up with that really define our staff culture. That's neither here nor there. These are the things that define us, work for us. Every organization is different, and our things aren't the things or the right way to do things.
Right.
There are other healthy, godly organizations out there with a completely different set of 10 staff culture values. And that's okay. Mm-hmm. It's more in the discovering process that I want to encourage people to do the work, to define them, to discover them, because mm-hmm. it will pay off. It'll have an amazing result on your productivity, the health of your staff, and the joy that will come from working together around a shared common, you know, valued system.
So then tell us a little bit about the process that you led Broadway Church staff through.
So it was about 3 years ago for us, and we broke up our entire staff into small groups. And working through this information, we said, hey, what are the things that maybe we've become nose blind to? Or what are those invisible things about our culture that either make you love this place or hate this place? Mm-hmm. What are those unwritten things that seem to be expectations that we haven't really talked about? And so we came up with a list of we kind of think of it this way. We held up a mirror to our organization, the best we could see. And we tried to take an internal look into the organization saying, what are things that we value around here? What make us us? What make us tick? What defines us that's different about how we do things than another church or another organization might do things? And so we, in small groups, all came up with a list. And we full on old school went with the
flip chart.
Yeah. I was going to say one of those whiteboards that you that you don't use
paper whiteboards.
Yeah, that's good. So we use these flip charts. Thank you, Paul. And we started writing names down, color coding the whole deal, old school style. And in all the different small groups, we brought them all back to a large group. Then we went onto a new school whiteboard. Mm-hmm. Okay, and we started to write down all these words that popped up. And through a process, we started to eliminate some words. So those two words are kind of the same. And then some of the staff members, like, they're pretty passionate about their word. And they said, no, innovation is different than creativity. And then we would debate as a staff together about why creativity, why not innovation? Are they the same thing? And so we came up with different words and phrases and statements, and we boiled it down after months of dialogue with a list of 10, like we mentioned. And we actually, after going through this, teaching on these, why are these 10 things important? Where do we see them? We brought practical examples about this value number 8 directly results because of this thing that we do, that ministry we're a part of, that event, mm-hmm. these things that happen. And we're all on the same staff, so we all know exactly what these things are. And at the very end of it, we actually came up with what we call a Broadway staff culture covenant. And we actually had everyone sign off on this saying, we will live by these things. These mm-hmm. things are important to us too. And we actually take that document now and we use it in all our hiring process. So even just this week, I was onboarding one of a new staff member we had just hired. And I sat them down and I walked them through step by step the Broadway staff culture covenant and had them sign off saying, if you aren't on board with these 10 things, you will not be happy here. Mm-hmm. These things are so intrinsically valued in our organization with our leadership and our staff. If you can't get on board with these 10 things, we're going to have a major problem. So I want to let you know right up front, you'll discover all these things by working here for a year or 2 years. But let me just speed that process up for you mm-hmm. and help with this onboarding process so you know what's important to us, you know what our expectations are, and you know how to operate on this team. And so just that alone has been worth its weight in gold, onboarding new staff over the last 3 years as we have already established this document.
So why don't we begin with number one, the first thing on our list of Broadway staff culture priorities.
Okay, so the first thing about our staff culture is we stated them all as we statements.
Okay.
So the first thing is we prioritize the lost. We prioritize the lost. We're committed to the priority of reaching lost people. Now this, it might seem like, okay, you're a church, obviously you prioritize lost people, but being a pastor in different churches over the years and having lots of friends that are pastors in churches, you'd be surprised that this doesn't make a priority list for a lot of churches. Mm. And discipleship is a priority at a lot of churches. And we've decided, you know what? Actually, evangelism and reaching lost people is is a priority to us. And if it's a priority to Jesus, we want it to make it a priority to us as well. Mm-hmm. You don't have to look much further than Luke 15 to realize that, you know, the shepherd searches until the lost are found. And there's more rejoicing in heaven over one lost lamb that is found than, you know, 99 lambs that aren't lost. Mm-hmm. And that's why in Luke 15, we learn that we actually leave the 99 to go pursue the one. And so that was resonated really deeply with our staff. And so that's why it's not an accident that it's number one on our staff culture priority list.
So are there places around Broadway Church, or actually, as we're talking, I'm thinking about even our Timber Books and Bistro. It's the cafe pre-COVID that we had open in the church. It wasn't just so that we could have coffee on Sundays,
right,
but it was an opportunity to invite our community, and especially the kids at the high school across the street to come over at lunch and to be part of us and to get to know us. And our Easter Bash, another thing that we, an event that we've done at during Easter, where we, all of our ministries work together to just to put on a great Easter event for our community. And it's grown to the point where a couple of years it was incredibly hard to manage because so many people came, right?
Yeah.
And so it's because, like you said, lost people matter to God. They matter to us. It reminds us of what we are at our core. We're a church giving glory to God, and the best way we can do that is to tell others about Him.
Absolutely. And so those things are really practical for us. Timber, having 100 high school students come across the street to interact with our cafe and our team, and being intentional about those relationships, things like the Easter Bash, the singing Christmas tree, just some of the things in our culture and our rhythms that we for sure prioritize every year and say, these are important to us. And so this staff culture priority of that we prioritize the lost, it really runs through everything we do. We don't lose sight of it.
Now, each one of these staff culture priorities, we couched with a question.
Ooh, which, I like that, couched.
Yeah, we paired with a question.
Yeah, we did.
So that we can kind of help jumpstart our brain to realize, are we actually applying this priority from our staff culture? So why don't you share the question from number one?
Yeah, and each of these questions, it's not just that we as a team would dig our teeth into or sink our fingers into a bit deeper. It's so I personally am faced and challenged on this priority.
Okay.
And so the question that we've paired or couched with number one, we prioritize the lost, is this: am I rubbing shoulders with the lost? Mm-hmm. So it brings it back to me personally. Simon, am I rubbing shoulders with the lost in my own life, with my neighbors, with my friends, with my interactions with people? Am I rubbing shoulders with the lost? And again, if you work outside the church, this might be like the most obvious thing in the world. Of course, I rub shoulders with the lost at people at my work and people at the gym, mm-hmm, and people at the wherever, sure, grocery store. And you're surrounded by people that don't believe what you believe, or people that don't share your same set of faith values. But when you work in a church full-time, your friends are the people you're on your volunteer team. They're people, mm-hmm, that you work with. There's times where I found myself driving out of my garage all the way to the church in the underground parking lot, go up the elevator into, sure, my office, do all of my office work with my Christian coworkers, mm-hmm, back to the elevator, down to the car garage, into my car, drive home into my garage. And I'm like, I don't see or interact with someone of a different faith, or someone that doesn't share my faith, someone that's not a Christian. And my world can become very small, and my world becomes very Christian. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's easy as a church staff member to lose sight that the rest of the world exists. Mm-hmm. And because this is a priority to us, when I interact with this question, am I rubbing shoulders with the lost? It instantly reminds me of this priority, that we prioritize the lost. Lost people matter to God. They have to matter to us.
This is not just a big church problem, getting caught up in the work of ministry. I remember serving at a much smaller church many years ago, and coming to that realization that I knew the name of the guy who lived on one side of my house, but I did not remember the name of the guy, mm-hmm, who lived on the other side of my, mm-hmm, house unless I talked to my wife. I realized that I had been spending so much time at the church managing my work that I had no friends who were unchurched people. Yep. I might have known the name of my neighbor next door, but I had no quality relationships or friendships or even a group of acquaintances, more than one or two, that were unchurched people. So I agree that this is a really important priority, that we prioritize the loss, and we have it at number one.
Yeah.
Let's move on to number two, the second Broadway staff culture priority.
Yeah. So number two is we empower others. Mm-hmm. We empower others. We're committed to multiplying ministers, not just monopolizing on ministry.
Okay.
It's got a little bit of a tongue twister there, but this is, it really comes from Ephesians chapter 4, where the Apostle Paul calls us to be some to be prophets, and some to be evangelists, some to be pastors. And it says that you have this gift set so that you can equip the saints for the work of ministry.
Okay.
Equipping the saints for the work of ministry. I am called to be a pastor for such a time as this, not so that I can do ministry, not so that I can participate in myself, but so that I can equip others to be involved in the work of ministry. And so it's so funny how in our context as pastors, how often this is forgotten. Mm-hmm. It's so much easier to become a doer in my area of ministry and a worker in my area of ministry rather than a leader in my area of ministry. So it's one thing we say around here all the time is we strive to be leaders in our area, not just workers. Leaders, not just workers.
What happens then when someone you give a task or give authority to, they don't do things as well as you would like them to do it? What if the quality, from your perspective at least, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. So you empower someone to do something and they don't do a great job of it. And now you look like your area is falling apart because mm-hmm. people aren't living up to your standard. John Maxwell, who is a leadership guru, who kind of invented the idea that we can grow in our leadership.
He certainly invented talking about it,
yeah,
right?
There you go. Mm-hmm. In maybe the 80s, 90s, mm-hmm. when the idea of like business leadership was pretty big, especially in the church world. And he says that if you can find someone to do something 80% as good as you, you need to delegate it away. Mm-hmm. So 80% is his threshold where he's like, delegate it away, empower that person to replace you at 80% of the value that you could bring to that role. Craig Rochelle came along a couple of years ago and goes, thanks, John, for getting the ball rolling on this one. But Craig Rochelle says, if you can find someone that can do the job as good as you with 60% of what you could do it for, but they have momentum, like they're on an upward trajectory, mm-hmm. he says, delegate it away. Empower someone else to do that thing. Grow yourself out of that role. And don't just delegate task. Don't mm-hmm. just delegate responsibilities away. He says, delegate authority.
Okay, let's camp there for a minute. Tell us a little bit more. Differentiate a little bit with what you're talking about, because some people think about this and they're thinking about tasks. They're thinking about a checklist.
Right.
What differentiate or draw the lines between that and what it means to delegate authority.
Yeah. So we know what delegating task is. Hey, I need this project completed by this time, go do it. And you delegate that task away, whatever that task is. When you delegate authority away, what you're doing is you are giving people the power to say yes to something deep in your organization. Andy Stanley says that the deeper you empower people in your organization to say yes, the more successful your organization will be. And so that is the idea of delegating authority away. When I delegate a task to someone, they still have to come back to me and be like, hey, I'm just checking in with you. Like, is this okay if I do that or not that? Or someone else wants to take it in a little different direction. Can I say yes? And then I'm the bottleneck. I'm the one that has to still have the final say on everything. Yes, no to that. Yes to this project or whatever. But if I delegate authority away and I say, hey, you're in charge of this project, you say yes to the things you need to say yes to. You say no to the things you say no to. If you're able to delegate authority away, you are really empowering others. Others will start to own projects. They'll start to own ministry at a whole new level. And you will not just walk as an organization. You will begin to run.
So what's the question attached to the second Broadway Church staff culture priority?
So the personal question we ask ourselves that lines up with this priority is, who am I intentionally empowering? Mm. Who am I intentionally empowering? Oftentimes we happen to empower others that happen to be standing around us or on one of our teams mm-hmm. or something. But the idea of being intentional about it is saying, hey, you need to get to another level of, you got to do this on purpose. You have to do it so it might hurt you to a point where this is like, this is a value to us and I mm-hmm. need to get this done. I need to empower, give stuff away. I need to be a leader in my area, not just a worker.
So inherent or inferred in this question, I believe, would be the fact that everyone in this organization should be able to answer this question.
Yeah.
Who am I empowering? It shouldn't just be a notion or an aspiration. We should be thinking about a face in our mind when that question is asked.
Yep. And to our staff's credit, I think that if you were to pull anyone from the worship leader to the person who's running our food bank, they would be able to tell you exactly who it is that they are intentionally empowering, because this is it's a value to our staff.
Well, why don't we stop it right there, Pastor Simon? Thanks for getting us started on this discussion about staff culture. And thank you so much for listening this month to the Broadway Church Leadership Podcast. A big thanks to our audio producer, Mr. Grant McAllister, for making everything sound great and writing that cool jingle you'll hear at the beginning and the end. Remember, here at this podcast, we do this because when it comes to leadership, that'll do, just won't do. We'll see you again next month.